The Hidden Life of Trees, Chapter 24, A Question of Character. On the country road between my home village of Hummel and the next small town in the Ahr Valley stand three oaks. They are a commanding presence out in the open fields, and the area is named in their honour. They're growing unusually close together. Mere inches separate the 100-year-old trunks. That makes them ideal subjects for me to study, because the environmental conditions for all three are identical. Soil, water, local microclimate. There can't be three different sets of each within a few yards. This means that if the oaks behave differently, it must be because of their own innate characteristics. And they do, indeed, behave differently. In winter, when the trees are bare, or in summer, when they're in full leaf, the driver of a car speeding by wouldn't even notice three separate trees. They're interconnecting crowns from a single large dome. The closely spaced trunks could all be growing from the same root, as happens sometimes if downed trees start to regrow. However, the triad of fall colour points to a very different story. Whereas the oak on the right is already turning colour, the middle one and the one on the left are still completely green. It takes a couple of weeks for the two laggards to follow their colleague into hibernation. But if their growing conditions are identical, what accounts for the differences in their behaviour? The timing of leaf drop, it seems, really is a question of character. As we learned in previous chapters, a deciduous tree has to shed its leaves, but when is the optimal moment? Trees cannot anticipate the coming winter. They don't know whether it's going to be harsh or mild. All they register are shortening days and falling temperatures. If temperatures are falling, that is. There are often unseasonably warm days in the fall, and now the three oaks find themselves in a dilemma. Should they use these mild days to photosynthesize a while longer and quickly stash away a few extra calories of sugar? Or should they play it safe and drop their leaves in case there's a sudden frost that forces them into hibernation? Clearly, each of the three trees decides differently. The tree on the right is a bit more anxious than the others, or to put it more positively, more sensible. What good are extra provisions if you can't shed your leaves and have to spend the whole winter in mortal danger? So, get rid of the lot in a timely manner and move on to dreamland. The two other oaks are somewhat bolder. Who knows what next spring will bring, or how much energy a sudden insect attack might consume, and what reserves will be left over afterward. Therefore, they simply stay green longer, and fill the storage tanks under their bark and in their roots to the brim. Until now, this behaviour has always paid off for them, but who knows how long it will continue to do so. Thanks to climate change, fall temperatures are remaining high for longer and longer, and the gamble of holding onto leaves is being drawn out until November. All the while, fall storms are beginning as punctually as ever in October, and so the risk of getting blown over while still in full leaf rises. In my estimation, more cautious trees will have a better chance of surviving in the future. You can see something similar on the trunks of deciduous trees and silver firs. According to the tree etiquette manual, the trunks should be tall and smooth, and this means no branches on the lower half of the tree. That makes sense because there's not much light at the bottom. As there are no sunbeams to be processed, unnecessary body parts that would only use up food are simply shut down. It's a bit like our muscles, which our bodies reduce in size when we don't use them in order to save calories. But trees cannot remove their branches on their own. They just have to let them die. The rest must be done by fungi, which attack the wood once it's dead. At some point, the branch rots, breaks off, and is finally recycled into humus. Now, the tree has a problem at the point where the branch broke off. Fungi can easily grow farther into the trunk because there's no protective coating of bark, at least not yet. But the tree can change this. If the branches were not too thick, up to an inch across, it takes just a few years for the tree to close the gap. The tree can then saturate the area with water from the inside, killing the fungi. But if the branches were very thick, this procedure takes too long. The wounds gape open for decades, offering portals through which the fungi can enter and penetrate deep into the wood. The trunk rots and, at the very least, becomes a little less stable. And that is precisely the reason the etiquette manual calls for only thin branches on the lower part of the trunk. Once they have fallen off as the tree grows, under no circumstances are they to be replaced. Yet, that is exactly what a few trees do. When a neighbouring colleague dies, some trees use the light that falls on them to grow out new buds below. They grow thick branches that are very beneficial at first. These trees can now take advantage of the opportunity to photosynthesize in two places at once, at the crown and lower down on the trunk. But one day, perhaps 20 years later, the other trees standing around will have increased in size of their crowns so much that the gap in the canopy closes up. Once again, the lower levels are dark and the thick branches die. Now the trees pay dearly for their craving of the sun. As I've just described, fungi now march deep into the trunk of the foolish trees and put them in danger. When you take your next walk into the forest, you can check for yourself to see that such behaviour really is an individual choice and therefore a question of character. Take a look at the trees growing around a small clearing. All have the same temptation to do something stupid like growing new branches on their trunks, but only a few give in. The rest keep their bark nice and smooth and avoid the predictable risk.